Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, what a day. Here we go. This on a Tuesday is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in sunny Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, the Herd hierarchy and the Buffalo Bills are in it. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning. Eli Manning is benched finally. Finally, it's time. It's a good day for Eli. Let me start with this. I am from the West, and I currently live in the West, but I moved to the Northeast for 11 years, and I had a wonderful time. There were many great things, not counting the weather, of course, I loved about the Northeast. But one of the things that always struck me, you would never have a Fenway Park out West. We would just blow it up and start over. In the West, doesn't matter what grandpa did or what your dad did, you chase your own dreams. Out East, you chase grandpa's dreams and your dad's dreams for you. The East is about 200-year-old churches and 100-year-old baseball stadiums and 7,000-year-old private schools and hierarchy and tradition. There would be no Fenway Park in San Francisco. We just build a new park. We don't romanticize yesterday. We don't have the East Coast's history. We got a lot of space and a lot of mountains and a lot of ocean views, and people upgrade and move from neighborhood to neighborhood, and it's okay. And out West, they would have benched Eli Manning 7 years ago, maybe five. But out East, it was hard. The Mannings are American royalty, and the New York Giants a blue blood franchise, and Eli is nice, and Eli is us. He's the old church. He's Fenway Park. There's great memories, and we can't bench Eli. Oh, hell. He's a shot fighter. God, if he played in Denver, he would have been benched years ago. If he played in Seattle, San Francisco, they may have benched him in between Super Bowls. It's just the way the East Coast is, and it's an amazing part of the East Coast, the churches and the prep schools and the history and the family trees, and it's wonderful, and it's been holding the New York Giants back for half a decade. It's time. The Giants benched Eli today. It's time. Number one, this is a perfect time. He's 116-116 as a starter. He doesn't have a losing record. So you don't bench him with a losing record, and this Giants team was going to go 3-13. So when you look back in 30 or 40 years, and that matters to people out East, 116-116 and two Super Bowls, and he beat Brady both times, and he's getting into the Hall of Fame. Maybe at least he's getting votes. It's perfect. You don't want him to go 3-13 off a 5-11 season, off a 3-12 season. This is dignified. He can now be a mentor for the next 14 weeks. He can be a classy mentor. Don't go to Jacksonville, Eli, for a conditional seventh-round pick. You and Tom Coughlin can hang out in Jacksonville someday on a golf course, have beers, and talk about the good old days. It's perfect. This is just the East Coast. They struggle with this. They struggle, you know, tearing down the 200-year-old ballpark or church or neighborhood or replacing a quarterback that's been done for 5-6 years. Think about this. The Colts got over Peyton Manning easier than the Giants got over Eli Manning. And Daniel Jones, it's a perfect time for him. Look around the league. Kyler Murray's a baby and Josh Allen's a baby, and it's all working. The transition from college quarterback to NFL quarterback has gotten significantly easier in the last 5 years because so many of the college concepts are being accepted now. They weren't years ago in the NFL. So we're just taking college quarterbacks and saying we're going to use 70% of your college offense. And heck, out in Arizona, they brought the college coach with them. That's the new NFL. And it's where everybody's working. Lamar's working. I thought Lamar was a project, not even a prospect. I thought Josh Allen was a project. I'm watching him this weekend. I'm like, he's better than Eli. Daniel Jones doesn't inherit a mess. They're really not. Daniel Jones gets an offensive line they've invested a lot of money in. Evan Ingram's an emerging, excellent tight end. When Golden State's back, they got real wide receivers. Saquon Barkley's a star. And Pat Shurmur's a very good offensive coach. This is not the Miami Dolphins here. Daniel Jones will move the chains. This is a lot better than Josh Allen got as a rookie. It's certainly better than Josh Rosen's gotten in his first two jobs. It's better right now than Kyler Murray has. And Kyler Murray threw for 350 yards. But the East Coast, and I loved it. I just soaked up all the tradition. I went to all those Hogwarts private prep schools. I'd go on tours to the Dinosaur Museum at Yale. I went to all the stuff. I put my arms around it. I went to Nantucket, the museums, and I loved it. But I prefer being able to just tear stuff down and start over if it's crappy. And sometimes old is crappy. It's not awesome. I didn't go to the old crappy buildings out there in museums. I went to the cool new ones. I had a choice. And so did the New York Giants. You got to move off him. It's wrecking ball time. Let him be a mentor. It's respectful. It's dignified. The first time you did it was a little rocky. But now it's time. I mean, you're going to see him get... You want to get see him get beat by 30 by Dak again? You want to see him get humiliated by Carson Wentz again? Or Russell Wilson? Or Aaron Rodgers? Or all Jared Goff? Or all these new young quarterbacks? I mean, this morning I looked around and I was looking at the ages of some of these quarterbacks. This is the new NFL. Goff is 24, Dak is 26, Wentz is 26, Mahomes is 24, Deshaun Watson's 24. I mean, outside of Mitch Trubisky, there's not only a bunch of new quarterbacks, I like all of them. I mean, they've all got little holes. Kyler's a little small for me. Wentz gets hurt a lot. Deshaun, I cross my fingers. Goff, sometimes I wish he was more athletic. But it's a perfect time for Eli, and it is an absolutely perfect time for Daniel Jones. This is not the Miami Dolphins. There's real players here. And by the way, the Giants have to get some stuff figured out. So now you move in Daniel Jones. Let's figure out, can Daniel Jones play? Because this is not an offense that needs to be totally rebuilt. And also, is Pat Shurmur the right guy? And the minute the New York Giants, the minute they selected Daniel Jones at number 6 and told us how great he was, our scouts, he's the best. Okay, now you told us Daniel Jones was great. We didn't think so. You did. So now you're being completely dishonest watching Eli play, watching a young kid, Josh Allen, beat you at home this weekend by not going to Daniel Jones. So you can at least be honest, authentic, and ethical because you told us Daniel Jones was great. And all of us said you're nuts. But if you're truly honest, authentic, and ethical, and you think he's as good as you claimed and the draft pick you selected him at, then you have no choice than to play him. Because A, we know Eli's a shot fighter, and B, we're watching all these young guys work. When's the last young guy that didn't work in this league? I'll tell you, Paxton Lynch. Of the last 20 guys drafted in the first round at quarterback, young guys, 19, and I don't love Trubisky, are winning games. Or at least productive. So you trapped yourself when you drafted Daniel Jones. You trapped yourself. Okay, because you keep telling us how great he is, and then we watched him in preseason, and he was pretty great. We'll play him. Congrats to Eli on a remarkable career. You know, second, third time he's available, he'll get some Hall of Fame votes. Who knows? And Daniel Jones, I was not watching the Giants game this weekend. I am now. I'm watching it now. Win for the NFL, win for the Giants. By the way, also in New York last night, there were two bad football teams. One had an excuse. The New York Jets were on their third quarterback. They didn't have their best defensive player, arguably C.J. Mosley. They didn't have their number one pick, three defensive starters out. Their tight end still out with a DUI in the offseason suspended. The New York Jets were missing 7 starters. 7 starters, yet they won time of possession, had more yards rushing, almost as many first downs, and they were both equally inept on third down. This should have been the Patriots and the Dolphins. End of the third quarter, if the Jets get a first down, they were trailing 16-3. Le'Veon Bell got a swing pass. If he gets a first down, they at least get a field goal, and it's 16-6. If they get a first down on this play, FS1 viewers, they're getting points out of this. We got ourselves a football game. How? The Jets were on their third quarterback and missing 7 starters. Cleveland's offense, you want to know what? We saw 2 bad teams last night. One of them we know is bad. The other one is a 24/7 hype machine known as the Cleveland Browns. Hey, ESPN announcer, stop calling him the next Brett Favre. Through two games, Baker Mayfield has two touchdowns and four interceptions and a quarterback passer rating lower than Eli Manning, who's being replaced today. They have the most penalties in the league, the most penalty yards, and their next five opponents are 5-0. Baker Mayfield, since he was named starter in the NFL, I think he leads the NFL in interceptions. If not, he's second. Jarvis Landry has completely disappeared, which is remarkable because David Njoku, their talented tight end, had a concussion by the first quarter, and OBJ had a cramp and left, and they still couldn't get it to Jarvis Landry, who had more interest on punts than he did on catches. Myles Garrett's a really good defensive end, but he leads the NFL last year in penalties for a defensive player. He had four more last night. You know what Cleveland is? Flashy quarterback, flashy wide receiver, and flashy defensive end. They're the guy that owns a Porsche, has beautiful clothes, expensive jewelry, and three ski boats, but lives in an apartment and has no savings. All the stuff that really matters in the NFL, like coach, Cleveland's below average. Offensive line, mess. Linebackers, not good. Point of view offensively, no idea. And by the way, two bad teams last night. One we know is bad and has excuses. The other one, the Cleveland Browns' next five games, Rams, Baltimore, Niners, Seattle, New England are 10-0. And the schedule, which looked real soft and cream puffy in the end, has a Buffalo team that looks better than we thought, a Baltimore team that's absolutely better than we thought, and Arizona is at least interesting. This puppy is about to implode in the next month. The Jets are awful. At least they had an excuse last night. Cleveland is just directionless, undisciplined, appears to be poorly coached, and a hot 24/7 hype mess.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So the Pittsburgh Steelers, during that awful Monday night football game, which was two bad teams, one with an excuse, the Jets, Steelers made a big trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Miami Dolphins now have every pick in the first round. Next year, they have 15 picks in next year's draft. So they at least, you know, say what you want about the Dolphins, at least they have a plan. I mean, they got a plan. And so the Steelers get Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's a good player. He's a safety, and he can do a little corner. He's a safety. He's a very, very good football player. They gave him a first-round pick, and the Steelers never did. So what were they telling you? Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers were telling you two things. Number one, we are giving away our first-round pick in a quarterback-heavy NFL draft because we think Mason Rudolph is our guy, is our future. That's the first thing they're telling you. There's four legitimate, maybe five legitimate first-round quarterbacks next year in the draft, first round. You're not getting them by the second, and Pittsburgh gave away their first pick. They're telling you, we like Mason Rudolph. 6'5", 230, big arm, threw for 9,000 yards his last 2 years at Oklahoma State. They like him. By the way, there's some Big Ben there. He is really big with a very big arm. He is heavy. He can handle the north winters. They like him. That's the first thing they're telling you. The second thing they're telling you is, hey, the season's not over. Our offensive line is still excellent. Our defense, young and talented, just added Minkah Fitzpatrick. Our schedule's incredibly workable. And our receivers are really, really young. And we're kind of trying to make it work, but they're talented. This is a very important thing to think about. Teams look at schedules. Look at the Pittsburgh Steelers schedule. This is really remarkable. And I think this goes a long way in the decision to make the trade because you're getting Big Ben. Big Ben's going to come back next year. So it's about this year. Do we think we can win this year? Weeks 4-10 for the Steelers this year, they have one road game. And that road game is at the Chargers Stadium. That will be a home game. They don't have a true road game from September 30th to November 11th. Okay, and their takeaway is, we can win. And by the way, after that, you tell me they can't beat Cleveland, Cincinnati, Arizona, the Jets, and Buffalo? They can't beat them with Mason Rudolph? Listen, Pittsburgh knows their personnel better than I do. Mason Rudolph's big, strong, and was wildly productive in college, and they see him at practice every day. And I said something on the air yesterday that I want to retract because they've earned my respect, and this move is telling me, we watch this kid every day at practice, He's our future. This is why we drafted him. We're going to have to play him sooner than we thought. Big Ben's coming back next year. But we're looking at our schedule. We're looking at our offensive line. We're looking at our division, by the way, which is, you know, Cincinnati's not real good. You're watching the Browns last night. You think they're unbeatable? And Baltimore's 2-0, but they've beaten Miami and Arizona. Do we really know everything about Baltimore? So I'm going to retract this from yesterday. New England's pretty good. So is Seattle. Seattle's won 8 of 9. I wasn't going to bail on the Steelers. But now Big Ben's out. Season over. I would like to retract that statement. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, weeks 4 through 10, no true road game, winnable games after that, still best offensive line in their division, a coach who will make the Hall of Fame, excellent general manager. They've added numerous parts now, Minkah Fitzpatrick to the defense, in a division with Cleveland looked awful, Cincinnati probably is, and Baltimore's good, but they've played them 22 times and split 11 and 11. I never know who's going to win those games between the Ravens and the Steelers. That was a message last night, Minkah Fitzpatrick. We like Mason Rudolph, and we still have a chance this year.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, we call it the Herd Hierarchy, our 10 best teams. I spend way more time on this than any man with a real life, marriage, and kids should. Here we go.
Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin.
Number 10 is the Buffalo Bills. Folks, they're 2-0 on the road. Now, it may be the Jets and the Giants, but it's winning on the road. And they've scored a touchdown in all 5 of their red zone road trips this year. Only Seattle said that. They upgraded wide receivers in the offseason. They needed to. Tried to upgrade their offensive line. And I think this is the best coaching staff in the NFL that nobody talks about. We know Kansas City's well coached. We know New England's well coached. We know the Rams are well coached. We know the Niners are well coached. Buffalo never puts Josh Allen in a position to fail. This is a very well-coached team, and I think toe-to-toe with I'll tell you this morning. If they played Cleveland this morning, Buffalo'd win. Because I honestly think this has a chance to be a wild card team. I really do. I think they're a 9-7 team. There's some limitations offensively, but I like them.
Number 9.
San Francisco. It was the one team I told you. I said, it's almost too easy. I'm stealing money. They're going to double their wins. Very creative. I still have some doubts on Jimmy Garoppolo. I do. I worry about his health. But again, they're 2-0 and 2-0 on the road. They didn't win a road game last year. That's called improvement. By the way, here's the other place they improved. They already have 4 interceptions this year. They had only 2 last year. So the 2 big issues with them last year, lousy on the road, 2-0 on the road, and could never take the ball away. They're taking the ball away. Now, they just had their left tackle out for a while, fibula issue. I don't even know where that's on your body. But Joe Staley's their left tackle. He's hurt. That does not help because I don't want Jimmy Garoppolo getting whacked. But I have the Niners, a very young offense, but fun to watch, number 9.
Number 8.
Seahawks, Russell Wilson on in 20 minutes. Listen, the Seahawks have won 8 of their last 9 games. This is very much Pete Carroll. We're going to play defense. We're going to run the football. And then we're going to ask Russell Wilson about twice a game to do that, like, wand magician thing and pull out a victory. By the way, ever notice every wide receiver they attain, they all work with Russell Wilson. They're 2-0 for the first time since their Super Bowl year. So, they, you know, I was a doubter on Seattle. I really was. Their defense was young. I didn't think they'd overcome Frank Clark to the Chiefs. So far, they've looked pretty good.
Number 7.
Philadelphia. Listen, just because teams lose, they have an injury bug at wide receiver. They're going to be fine. DeShaun Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey get healthy. They're going to be fine. I just love the coach. I love the GM. I like their quarterback. I think they have a good offensive line. Here's where I know they're good. They are 3rd in the NFL in rush defense. They force you to throw the ball. That they got a really good defensive line. And they're also 2nd on 3rd down percentage. What does that mean? They keep the ball away from you. 3rd down, they make them 1st downs. Philadelphia, well coached, smartly quarterbacked, well run. I like them.
Number 6.
Baltimore. I got some questions, but there's one thing I love. When you have a running quarterback and he puts himself and he's vulnerable, sometimes you worry about turnovers. They don't have a turnover this year. So not only are they productive, I'm not seeing a ton of penalties and I'm not seeing any turnovers. And here's the thing with Lamar Jackson. 9 starts is like Dak. He's 1-8-9. Dak's 1-9-10. This is about winning. Now, winning's not the only thing, because sometimes you can mask deficiencies, Tim Tebow, with winning. But what I see is an ascending player, a very good coaching staff. They've added tight ends, wide receivers, running backs, Greg Roman, a coordinator. I'm not totally sure they're this good, but I like what I see. I got Baltimore at 6.
Number 5.
Green Bay, I've said all offseason, the defense will carry this team until Thanksgiving. Then Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur, then they'll get it worked. Listen, 5 takeaways is tied for the most in the NFL. This organization 2 years ago said we're going to have to pay Aaron a lot of money. And they started drafting corners, and they started going into the free agent pool, which they don't love to do in Green Bay. And they went and got like Preston Smith and really good players without paying them a fortune. That defense now is young. It's fast. They're coaching it to be aggressive. And they're 2-0. And it's been, listen, Chicago and Minnesota are top 5 defenses. Don't look at their offense and say it's choppy. Chicago makes everybody look choppy. Chicago's going to make everybody not named Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes look choppy. Don't hold that against them early.
Number 4.
I'm worried a little bit about their offensive line depth, but I'll put the Rams at number 4. Listen, they're 8-1 at home in the regular season since the start of last year. That's why I picked them against the Saints. We don't think of the LA Coliseum as a home field advantage, right? It's just not that loud. It's not Lambeau. It's not Foxborough. It's not Philadelphia. They don't lose at home. They play really, really well. It's a fast track, and they're a fast team. Cooper Kupp, we all worried about Todd Gurley. Cooper Kupp, I believe, is Jared Goff's key. Cooper Kupp has been instrumental so far. He was huge in the Saints game. And by the way, only other team that has won as many games in the last 2 years is New England. So the Rams are a real team with a real structure.
Number 3.
Dallas Cowboys. I still think they have Dak has only been sacked once. I still think when healthy, it's the best offensive line in the NFL. I think they've added really smart pieces. Listen, they have about 8 elite players. You know, not many teams in the league. I don't think New England has 8 elite players. I mean, they've got an elite running back, an elite receiver, elite left tackle, elite center, 2 elite linebackers, an elite corner, an elite edge rusher. Now, I wonder when you pay all those guys, they're going to have some holes. Yeah, I mean, you just can't keep paying everybody. But when I look at Dallas, they've scored 9 offensive touchdowns over 2 games. You know how many times? It took them 6 games to get there last year. So that just tells you. The Randall Cobbs, the Michael Gallups, the healthy offensive line, an ascending Dak. This is a real offense. This is a real offense.
Number 2.
Kansas City. Do you know Patrick Mahomes has only started 19 games? Why does it feel like he's been around for a long time? Maybe because every game is so spectacular that they all get embedded in our minds. Listen, they, shocker, number 1 in passing offense. They have scored 25-plus points in 23 straight games. And what you have here right now is you have the best play designer in the NFL, Andy Reid, with the best quarterback talent in the league, Patrick Mahomes. So I got news for you. We don't have the AFC. I'm just going to give the programming director at CBS a heads up. You're going to want to put them on about 12 times a year. Because when you get the play designer and the all-time quarterback talent, that was like Holmgren and Favre. You just had to watch the Packers for a decade. That's what they're hoping LaFleur and Rodgers come. Play designer and great quarterback talent.
Number 1.
What category is New England defensively not number 1? They're really good. It's the best secondary in the league. They never get beat over the top. They have active, hard-hitting, fast linebackers. They don't have 1 elite pass rusher, but they led the NFL last year in pressures. They make no mistakes. They don't get penalized. Brady is so detailed. I think they have the deepest running back group in the NFL. The wide receivers with Antonio Brown, you know, it's a work in progress. But since they haven't been this explosive with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown and Julian Edelman, you got to pick your poison on that. They're not even playing their rookie. They're not going to play him till Thanksgiving. So I think you're really trying to pick apart them. If you don't have New England 1 and Kansas City 2, you know, you're trying to pick apart. I get Hall of Fame coaches and world-class quarterbacks. I put New England one because they have a better defense, and I do think post-Thanksgiving that's going
to
matter.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The Seahawks have their best record since their Super Bowl season, won 8 of 9 games. It's hard to me, from a kid from Seattle, not to be a fan of Russell Wilson. You know what I think of him. Super Bowl champ. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. All right. So first of all, I watched all the video of you in that locker room in Pittsburgh, and that's as much fun as I've seen you have not winning a Super Bowl. Russell, is it different to win on the road? It just felt different for watching you.
Well, yeah, of course. I think that to be able to go on the road, first road game of the year, to be able to find a way to win is a big deal, you know, and to be able to get a huge win in a tough environment. Heinz Field is not an easy place to play. It's a place that I've always dreamed about playing when you're a young kid, you know, growing up on the East Coast. And I'm glad I'm a Seahawk, but to be able to go there and beat them on the road, we haven't played there. Supposedly, coach was telling me before the game that we hadn't played well there in the past years. And we wanted to, you know, put a stamp on a big game, and we found a way to win.
It's interesting. I think it's very important for teams to have identities. Your championship, your Super Bowl team was defense, running, and you doing magical things. This identity to me is defense, running, and you doing magical things. It does feel a little bit like that team. My question is, do you have enough veterans? You and Bobby are going to be Hall of Famers. Do you worry this team is really young?
No, you know, the funny thing is when we won the Super Bowl and when we went back-to-back years, we were really young. You know, I think the year we won the Super Bowl, Colin, and I think you know this, we were actually the youngest team in the NFL that year. I think that the reality is this, you know, and I always say this, you know, experience is only necessary for those who are unqualified. And I believe that we're qualified. You know, I believe that we're ready to play, do whatever it takes. You know, and I think more than anything else, though, we got to focus on one moment at a time, one game at a time, just try to capitalize where we can. And get some big wins along the way.
It's funny. I watch all these young quarterbacks, and they run around, and Lamar and Kyler, and I think, you're like the old guy now. Like, you're the old veteran guy who runs around and does it right. You and Steve Young, you didn't get hurt. Do any of these young guys or their agents or their coaches ever call you for advice on the style of play which you have sort of perfected? Magical, run, and stay healthy.
Well, I think those guys really know what they're doing. I mean, Lamar is playing unbelievably well. I was texting my guy Earl actually yesterday, just telling him to tell Lamar that I love watching him play. You know, so we were talking about that yesterday. I think Lamar is playing great. I think Kyler's going to be a phenomenal football player throughout his career. Those guys know what they're doing. They played so much college football, too, so it transfers well. I do think that in this league, though, the National Football League, those linebackers, those safeties, those defensive linemen, the corners, they're ferocious. They can stop on a dime and get to you pretty quickly. I mean, when we really think about it, when you play college football, you know, only one, two, three of those guys maybe make it in the NFL. So you're taking each conference's, each team's best college football players and put them on the field. And so it becomes very real very quickly. And I noticed that my rookie year when I tried to step up in the pocket and try to scamper away, try to run away from Patrick Willis and Bowman back in the day. And I realized that was a no-go situation. So, you know, you got to learn how to slide. You got to know how to get down. You got to be able to protect yourself and all the above.
One of the things that I think is remarkable, you led the NFL in touchdowns with 34 back in 2017, and that was with a rebuilding and at times injury-plagued offensive line. You have worked with virtually every wide receiver. You and Brady, it doesn't matter. Every receiver they give you, drafted high, undrafted, it works. Now you have a kid, very talented, DK Metcalf. And this is your next, like, guy. And we all know Lockett's great. So what is the process? Take my audience. What is the process when you get a new wide receiver? When do you start trusting him? How do you build that trust?
Well, you built that trust, you know. For example, I'll use DK, for example. As soon as he got drafted, I FaceTimed him right away and just started talking to him about the work ethic that we got to have and where we got to go. And I think he was fired up, too, because, you know, he could have been a first-round pick, and I think he was excited to come to Seattle and do the things that he wanted to prove to people and prove himself right as well. And so from that moment on, we put the work in. I think all of our receivers have, to be honest with you. And I think that's the due diligence in the offseason, the taking the extra time to, you know, for all of us to get together in California, work together, spend a week together doing that. And then, you know, for DK and I, for example, we were getting up at 5:20 during the ESPYs week, 5:20 in the morning, throwing at 5:45 at UCLA, making sure we put the work in. And, you know, there's no substitute for hard work. And I think that, one, you got to have smart guys. We got smart guys. Two, you got to have talented guys. And three, you got to have playmakers. You got to have guys that believe that no matter what, we're going to make a play. And we have all that across the board. It's been exciting. Obviously, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, David Morris coming back. JB, he's been playing great. Malik played a great game last week. So there's a lot of versatility, and there's a lot of youth. And youth is a good thing. Like I said, if you can handle it and if you're prepared, anything great can happen. So I think we put the due diligence in.
You know, Russell, what's interesting is you see Mahomes, but he's got an offensive coach. And you see Breeze, but he's got an offensive coach. I always think it's funny with you and Pete, because Pete's the defensive guy. And defensive coaches can be conservative, and they don't want you to lose the game. And I always think, are there times that Pete watches Russell and goes, oh, Russell, slide. Because you've got an ad-libbing component that can drive defensive coaches crazy. What is your relationship with Pete? Do you ever feel, Pete's a defensive guy, Russell. If you ask defensive coaches, they'd rather you just hand the ball off and throw 12 times a game. What's your relationship with Pete like?
Well, Coach Carroll, he understands the game across the board. You know, there's nobody who understands the game better than him. The stuff that he sees throughout the game, throughout practice, we're constantly talking. And, you know, I've been very fortunate and very blessed to be with a great head coach for a period of time here. Obviously, going into my eighth year, we've won a lot of football games. Coach Carroll just won his 100th, football game with the Seattle Seahawks. And it's a lot of wins. You know, it's not easy to do. And it takes a lot of hard work. And I think that relationship, you see, obviously, Tom and Coach Belichick and their relationship. I think for Coach Carroll and I, we want to continue to build on what ours is and continue to have a winning formula. And, I think in terms of Coach's style, he's the most consistent guy you'll ever know, just in general. You know, he comes to work, he's prepared, he's fired up every day. But I think also, too, the thing about Coach Carroll is that he loves winning. You know, he'll do whatever it takes to win, and we'll do whatever it takes. And I think that's the thing. He prepares everybody. He helps prepare me. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun winning, too, along the way.
You won a Super Bowl as one of the young guys. Now you're one of the leaders and the veterans. Which do you prefer, being the young guy nobody knew or believed in, or being the veteran that faces pressure and that sometimes is being relied on to win the games? What do you prefer?
Well, I love them both, to be honest with you. When I came in the league, I had high expectations for myself anyway. So the expectations haven't changed. When you strap on the cleats and put on your helmet, you're going out there to win and win the whole thing. And so my mentality hasn't changed at all. I think that I've also learned how to live with a lot and how to live with little, and to have the two spectrums of both, coming into the league as a guy that people didn't think I would be able to make it, and just working through it and just going along with the process and just loving the process. And then, on the retrospective end of it all and the other end of it all, to work to earn everything. But at the same time, in the middle of all that is just this mentality of loving to win, this obsession with winning and whatever it takes. And so I like being young, but I also like being the vet too, you use all that experience to help others. You use all the experience to help teach and to love guys and to help them out and to do whatever it takes, to help them be successful as well and help our football team win.
Well, you've created a dynamic culture. It's one of the smart, optimistic cultures in the NFL. We got one in New England and one in Seattle. It's, again, a young team with a couple of great leaders, you and Bobby Wagner, and a legendary coach. Russ, I love having you on the show. And my Pacific Northwest roots, it's hard for me not to root for you. And thanks, bud.
Appreciate it, man. It's always a pleasure, Kyle. I'll see you guys. Go Hawks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Speaking of Michigan at Wisconsin, the guy that's going to be calling that for our network, Mr. College Football, Joel Klatt. Come on, bring it.
What's
up? They just legalized beer drinking in Wisconsin last week.
Well, at the stadium, at least. Yeah.
They've been drinking it other places. Anyways, yeah, I can't wait for this matchup, boy. I tell you what, Michigan with their struggles offensively against what is right now, and I know it's only been two games, and I understand that Wisconsin's opponents have not been great, but Wisconsin's the number one total defense, scoring defense, rushing defense, passing efficiency defense. They haven't given up a point. Have not given up a point. And so now Michigan, with their struggles offensively through the first two games, have to go face that defense. I can't wait to watch this thing play out.
You and I have defended Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, and rightly so, but yes.
Okay. This weekend.
Are you about to jump?
Listen, I like a
guy. Get away from the ledge.
No.
Just step back.
Four years in, you got to be able to beat Wisconsin at Michigan.
Okay.
Bo Schembechler was beating Wisconsin.
I think Wisconsin is really good. I mean, Wisconsin is in the top 10. I'm not ready to throw Jim Harbaugh out.
I'm not throwing him out. I'm saying I'm a huge Harbaugh fan. He's got to own this offense. It's not getting better.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because this is the least involved he's been with any of his offenses at any level. So if you go back to his days at San Diego, that's where he started as a head coach, San Diego. Then he goes to Stanford. Then he goes to the 49ers. Now he's with Michigan. This is unequivocally the least involved Jim Harbaugh has ever been with an offense of his team.
Well, what does that mean?
Let me tell you what it means. So in every game plan or offensive meeting in the past, at wherever he's been involved in the offensive meetings.
So what's
in
he
the
doing
game
now?
Plan.
Having crackers.
Now
down the
he's
hall?
Being more of a CEO,
what
and
does
he's
that
left
mean?
It. He's left it to Josh Gattis. So he will pop in on one of those meetings, and then he'll go spend time with the special teams and with the defense. And he's more of
hover.
More of a hoverer, and he's less involved in the actual game planning. So now he's doing more of the CEO type of deal versus being involved in the actual play calling on Saturday, being involved specifically in the game planning during the course of the week. I think that's interesting. I don't know if people out there know that. This Jim Harbaugh handed the keys to his whole program offensively to Josh Gattis, who had never called plays before in his life.
Right.
And now this is Josh Gattis' offense.
Sounds like you're throwing Josh Gattis under a bus a little.
Am I?
No, it's everybody's like, so if it fails, Josh Gattis, get him out of here. this is Harbaugh's team. I don't want to hear about some coordinator.
And I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that at all.
Who's this Gattis guy? How old is he?
Gattis is a young guy. He's in his 30s. He was at Alabama last year as a co-coordinator with Mike Locksley.
I never even heard of him.
He comes from the Joe Moorhead tree. If those of you that are following this, Joe Moorhead is the head coach at Mississippi State. Bad loss, by the way, last week to Kansas State.
He's a great coach.
He is a great coach offensively. And what he did at Penn State, he came from Fordham, the FCS, and he goes to Penn State with Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley, and then Nick Saban was like, hey, I want to run that offense.
Okay.
So he went and he got some guys that were disciples of Joe Moorhead as Joe Moorhead moved to Mississippi State. One of them was Josh Gattis. He was at Bama last year. And Harbaugh said, hey, I want that offense, and so he got Josh Gattis.
But if they lose, Josh Gattis gets nailed. Because he was a co-coordinator of a college football team, and now the whole if they stink Saturday at Wisconsin.
You say that with such disdain.
I don't have disdain for anybody in life.
Oh, he's the midday host at KWX in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, if you're any good, you're doing drive time. The point is, you can't blame Josh
what
Gattis
time is this show
if
on?
This thing unravels. I don't want to hear about Josh Gattis.
I'm not saying it's Josh Gattis'
fault.
What is
this guy? He was a coach
I'm
at
just
Fordham.
Telling you facts.
You know, he's the guy that... You
want facts or do you not want facts? This is Big J journalism right here.
I'll tell you what, we are the standard of journalism, but if you're going to be Jim Harbaugh and make seven large a year, then
don't
give me Josh Gattis.
I just told you the truth of what was going on, and I don't disagree with you. And they've got to fix what's going on in the short yardage, okay? So Michigan struggled in the last couple of games in short yardage, and that's not
acceptable
in particular for a Harbaugh team, which has been great at that during the course of the last few years.
All right, let's do
big game
Friday,
big noon Saturday.
Okay, there's
watch
seven
it,
powers in college football, despite what all these
seven. Okay,
Notre Dame, Alabama.
You're including Notre Dame. I mean, I've sat on this couch and you're like, Notre Dame is never going to
do anything.
Okay,
let me start over.
Go ahead.
The seven biggest brands in college football.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Texas, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, and USC.
Okay.
USC loses to Utah on Friday, and they're an underdog. it's over. They're looking for a new coach because they go to Washington and Notre Dame after that.
Yeah, their schedule coming up is not
good. Okay, let's just cut. Let's stop. Don't tell me it's Joel Gattis' fault if USC loses.
It's Josh, first of all.
Okay.
And I'm not telling you that with USC.
Greg Gattis is now the problem with Michigan football. I got news for you. USC loses Friday. Go get a new coach.
Do you really want to do that without the AD?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I'm not
like,
saying.
What, do you put a roof on a house before you have a foundation? Of course you don't, Colin. Come on, cart before the horse. No coach can work for an AD that didn't hire him. So I told you this last week. You're dead wrong, by the way. You're dead wrong on this. You can't go and solidify the coaching spot without first solidifying the athletic director spot.
I'm not saying you fire Clay Helton Friday. I'm saying, but you make a decision as an organization.
Who makes that decision?
Well, the president. That's what they get paid for. Yeah, again, I believe if you pay somebody $6 million, they got a responsibility to take the heat.
If I'm the president, this is what I'm doing at USC. I'm going out and finding, and I'm concentrating 100% of my effort as it relates to the athletic department to finding the best possible athletic director so that person can then make that decision.
You know what I do? I call my biggest boosters. How much money you got in your ATM?
That's what they've been doing for the last decade. That's why they wound up with all of these guys that weren't great athletic directors, but everyone thought like, hey, big name, played with for the program. He's a Trojan. How'd that work out for you, USC?
Boy, you got a lot of spite there. You live here. You think 15 minutes from your house, you think you'd root for him a little. You drive by at the camp.
I don't root for anybody. This is Big J journalism.
You don't root for anybody?
No. Maybe Colorado a little bit. By the way, I gave you a nice under on that one, or a nice upset pick.
Okay,
on that
Before I get, I want to get to some stuff. So years ago, Mason Rudolph played for Oklahoma State. You did a couple of their games.
Few of their games. That's right.
He had a shootout with Baker Mayfield, who's not working in the NFL.
Not working. I guess throwing for 300 yards, winning by 20 is not working.
Do you know since he became starter in the NFL,
crazy.
Leads the NFL in interceptions.
He's played for like 8 games. Listen to Peter King.
He's a human bakery. Give me a break, Baker. Last night was embarrassing.
It was? I didn't realize winning by 20 and throwing for 300 yards in the National Football League is embarrassing.
Was not a good look.
It wasn't. Really? What is a good look?
Jets missing 7 starters, and they rushed for more than you. They had more time of possession and almost as many first downs.
I didn't know Baker was responsible for the run game in Cleveland.
Okay. So let's go to Mason.
Oh, look at you, Chase. Look at that. I mean, that was just like a beeline.
Mason Rudolph, can he play?
Yes, he can play. In fact, I thought that coming out, he was one of the best throwers of the football that we had coming out of college.
You said that, actually. I remember that.
And he's a big, strong-arm quarterback, very accurate down the field, was a great deep ball thrower in the college ranks. I liked him. What I thought he was going to struggle with, which would take some time, which was the schematics of the game, because Oklahoma State was a little less intricate than, let's say, in Oklahoma that has produced the other quarterbacks that we're talking about. So he needed some time. Pittsburgh was the perfect spot for him because of that. He could sit and he could learn. He could get comfortable in the National Football League. I won't be surprised at all if he has some success, and he's got the threat on the outside that he had in college, which is that guy, James Washington.
Yeah, they played together.
They were great. I thought they were, at the time, the best deep threat in college football combination. He's a very good player. I will not be surprised at all if he has some success.
All right, let's go to this. Daniel Jones, you didn't broadcast any games, but you
saw. I did not.
You did. You were a little questionable. I don't love his arm strength.
I was hard on the Giants for their pick. I thought it was the wrong place to pick Daniel Jones. If it works out, then it was the right place to pick him. The thing that I thought about Daniel Jones is I thought that we had seen the best that Daniel Jones had to offer. I didn't see much upside. I didn't see much potential. Now, having said that, he played great in the preseason. The regular season is far different than the preseason, so we'll see how this all plays out in New York. I thought that there were guys with better potential. However, I did say at that time he was the most pro-ready at the time. If you needed a guy to play tomorrow, so maybe their selection of Daniel Jones actually was more of a clue of what they thought of Eli Manning in terms of his longevity or how long this was actually going to play out in reality, because now it's here. And it's Daniel Jones' era, and I think maybe that selection was less about, hey, we just love Daniel Jones, and more about, hey, this is not going to work long-term, and we're going to need somebody to play within the first three, four, 5 weeks of the NFL season.
You know, it's funny. He actually, in a uniform, looks like Eli. I'm not joking.
He does.
He literally looks like Eli Manning.
I was looking at that picture, like he looks like he could be Eli's son.
Eli's son.
He basically throws like he's a more athletic version. He's like Alex Smith, straight line speed. You know, he's not clever like Lamar, but he can run. If you just give him the ball and say go for 30 yards, he can run. All right, let's segue back to the college football, where I'm going to teach you a couple lessons here. Let's start with this. I'll teach you. You've been very critical of Brian Kelly at Notre Dame to the point where I'm uncomfortable. I got to tell you
something. What are you talking about?
A lot of times.
When did I? What?
It's a lot of negativity, but it's subtle.
I totally disagree. I'm the one out here defending Notre Dame when you're taking shots at him about, oh, it's a cold climate, it's a religious undertones, and I just don't think that can be great anymore. And I'm like, no, they're one of the biggest brands in college football. And then today, all of a sudden, you're like, you've been critical of Brian Kelly. They're one of the top brands.
I'm going to throw this
out. What is this?
I'll tell you, it's an inquisition. I think this quarterback, Ian Book, I think Notre Dame's got a shot at Georgia. I saw the line this morning. It was 15. I'm like, I think Notre Dame can play with Georgia.
Here's why that line is where it's at.
Why?
Is because Georgia is an elite rushing team. They're leading the SEC again, 286 yards a game on the ground. And if you were to look at Notre Dame, they played only two games because they've already had one of their off weeks. They played Louisville, then they had their off week, then they came back. Their game in the opening week against Louisville, the one question mark I had coming out of that game was their run defense. They missed a lot of tackles, gave up far too many yards per rush, and that was against Louisville. And so now you're going to face a team in Georgia that is far superior from a rushing standpoint. That's the concern for me with Notre Dame, and I think that's why the line is where it's at, because that's what Notre Dame is going to try to do, and that's where Notre Dame has fallen short a bit early in the season. But I am absolutely a Brian Kelly defender. I think that Notre Dame is and should be and will be a great program in college football.
I like Ian Book. I like him.
Ian Book is a very good player. There's no doubt about it. They, right now as a program, with Book as their quarterback, with their head coach, they're in a very Michigan-esque type of spot, in that they need one of these wins.
Yeah, but I think they're better than Michigan because Book's better.
Yeah, because they beat Michigan last year.
Yeah, and I think they're better. I think this Ian Book kid, I think he'll play in the NFL.
Potentially.
Shea Patterson's not playing in the NFL.
Maybe, maybe not. All I'm saying is that when they've gotten on this stage, the national narrative tends to be like, well, they can't play with the teams from the SEC.
You know who this guy is? You know who Ian Book is? I'm not joking.
Please.
He's a better athlete, little less of a thrower than Baker Mayfield. I think he's really good. He's not the thrower that Baker is.
So, is this a compliment for Baker? Because you love Ian Book.
No, but I think Ian Book's going to get drafted in the third round. Baker got drafted number one. He got overdrafted.
Which he should have been taken number one.
All right, let me give you one more lesson.
I'm just telling you right now, Notre Dame needs one of these from a national playoff perspective narrative. They need one of these wins based on how they played in the national championship game a few years ago, which is unfair to the current batch of kids there, and then how they played last year against Clemson in the semifinal.
Right, we're not going to do your upset of the week anymore. I stopped.
Oh, that's right, because I was 2-0 last week. You don't want me to upstage you. By the way, I'll do it. It's Oklahoma State. Watch out, Texas. Oklahoma State is a good football team. Watch out for Oklahoma State this week.
I'll make a lock.
With the Longhorns.
Texas wins by 20.
All right.
It's my lock of the week.
You did that out of spite. Look at your eyes.
No. Hey, Goulet, this morning, what did I come in? What was my lock of the week?
Yesterday you said you were on Texas.
Yeah. My guy, a bunch of sources.
All right, we'll see.
My sources are impenetrable.
Loser sits with a cobra next week.
Okay, finally, I want more of my sources?
Please.
Yeah, might as well give you one. So here it is. Here's what I told a big shot, a CEO of a major corporation in America. They are done with Chip Kelly. It's not the record. It's not the record. He's not doing the booster stuff. He's disengaged with recruiting. He's too aloof. He's not part of the family. It's not the losing. Chip Kelly's running out of allies at UCLA fast.
That's interesting because what we have not seen in college football a lot of is guys getting fired for performance reasons in only two seasons, right? That's very uncommon.
But he is seen as so iconoclastic and so sort of aloof. If you don't have allies in a building.
I don't disagree with you.
Everybody here loves me, so I'm safe. You're on the road all the time. You need to make more friends here. So you're like Chip Kelly. You got very few allies.
Oh,
I think he's in trouble.
I'm almost positive that my equity in this building might even be larger than yours. However, having said that, Chip, here's I think where he's missing the boat is that he's so staunchly saying, I'm not running my offense that I ran at Oregon. And it's like, well, that's why we hired you. is to do that, to do what you did at Oregon. That's why you're here. You're not here to run the Philadelphia Eagles offense. You're not here to run San Francisco 49ers offense. It's not working. When it comes to yards per play, they are dead last in the country.
I know.
In yards per play offense.
I know.
4.1. That's not, I mean, it's not working. And one of the other things, you have to look at dynamics. If it was a young athletic director that was hanging his hat on this hire, Chip would be safe
right
now.
It's a veteran.
It is a veteran in Dan Guerrero that I don't think he's going to retire soon.
Yes.
So you might be right. And
this is a source. It's not an opinion. By the way, raise your hand if you like, in this room, if you like me more than Klatt, raise your hand.
One hand is... Joy.
Oh, I have no
Goulet.
Choice. I have no choice.
And Goulet?
No, Goulet didn't raise his hand.
Oh, nice, Goulet.
We see you once a week. I have to sit across from Colin.
I lowered
Joy,
my hands, so there'd
hurt.
Be no confusion.
A lot of people here
that
like
hurt
me.
A little bit.
A lot of people like me here.
That hurt a little bit.
I do like having you on.
I love to be on the show.